This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. Robert Moog, the creator of the first music synthesizer, died in 2005, but he's still remembered and celebrated as one of the key pioneers of electronic music. A two-day music festival called Moogfest begins today in Asheville, North Carolina, showcasing dozens of Moog enthusiasts, including Thomas Dolby, Naz, Morton Subotnick, and the Magnetic Fields. Moog lived and worked in Asheville, where his company still manufactures synthesizers and another eerie-sounding instrument, the theremin. Electronic music was still a new concept in the mid-60s when Moog created his synthesizer. It didn't take long for other people to manufacture their own versions of the instrument. The synthesizer caught on in all forms of music, from the avant-garde to rock, pop, and novelty. This medley includes just a few examples. That was Sun Ra, Wendy Carlos from Switched on Bach, Todd Rundgren from a compilation of Thelonious Monk tunes, and Kraftwerk, Heart, The Who, The Beastie Boys, Parliament, and Stevie Wonder. Terry Gross spoke with Robert Moog in 2000. For their interview, he brought a mini Moog to the studio and gave a demonstration.
Okay, so here's a plain sound. This is a pure electronic pitch. Now I will frequency modulate it. By that I mean that I will vary the pitch of its tone periodically. So most people would say that was a different sound than just this. Now I can speed up and slow down the modulation. Or make it a different shape. Here's what we call a square wave. It makes the tone sound like a trill. So that's just one example of how we can use one electronic circuit to periodically or even aperiodically change the operation of another one and make musically interesting sounds in the boot and in the process.
Now, regular instruments, acoustic instruments, operate through physically doing something to the instrument. You pound it, you press it, strum it, bow it, blow air into it. Compare that with the principles of an electronic music instrument like the Moog.
The energy to make the sound is there. It comes out of the wall.
So electricity.
Yes.
And so your knobs allow you to just change the shape of a sound wave.
Yes.
The amplitude, the shape of it.
Yeah, and we can increase the complexity of the sound. For instance, there's one tone. Now we can add a second tone. Here's one, the other, together. They form a richer third tone. So So we can add sounds and waveforms together. We can use one waveform to shape what we hear from another circuit. We can also filter out the overtones, the harmonics that are made by these waveforms.
You want to give me an example of that?
Here's... Let's get a brighter sound. There. This is called a low-pass filter. Originally, it was a technical term, but musicians these days, at least ones who plug in, understand what that means. So I'll close the filter, and we'll cut out first the higher overtones and then all of them. Now, when I vary the filter slowly like that, you can hear what's happening, that the sound is getting more mellow and less bright as I turn down the knob here labeled cutoff frequency. But if instead of my turning the knob, I use a waveform that goes up and then down every time I hit a key, we'll get a sound like this. That opening and closing of the filter was done not by me, but by the envelope generator. Now I'll make it faster, and you'll see what effect that has on the sound. And still faster. Now that happened so fast that if I had to do that with my hand, I couldn't possibly, because my hand can't move that fast. But electronics can move that fast. So now I have a different sort of sound. I have a plucked string-like sound because I've set up a sound here that's bright and with lots of harmonics at the beginning, and then within, say, 30 or 40 thousandths of a second, it dies down and our ear identifies that as a string-like sound.
Now, your Moog synthesizer was designed to do things that a piano could never do, yet you gave it a piano keyboard. Did you ever consider an alternate design since you were creating a new system altogether?
We considered a lot of alternate designs, and in fact, the first synthesizer systems that we built in the mid-60s had a wide variety of control devices. Besides the keyboard, we had a device called a ribbon controller that you run your finger along as if it were a violin string. We had drum controllers. We even had doorbells. We experimented with everything, joysticks. And we arrived at a keyboard because, A, musicians were familiar with it. B, at that time, they were readily and cheaply available so that we didn't have to spend a lot of money on tooling. And B, it did serve a musical purpose. At least some of our customers wanted served. Not all, but some of our customers were interested in playing conventional melodies and harmonic content from a keyboard.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you had like Walter Carlos, later Wendy Carlos, performing Switched on Bach, using the Moog to play a kind of newfangled-sounding version of Bach. And at the same time, you had a lot of avant-garde composers and musicians using the Moog synthesizer to create a kind of avant-garde music that hadn't been possible before.
That's right. One of our first customers was Vladimir Ussachevsky, who at that time was the head of the Columbia-Princeton Electronic Music Center. He's sort of the grandfather of tape music in this country, and he was interested in getting away from the keyboard. He bought quite a few electronic modules from us, but he never bought a keyboard from us.
Other records from the 60s, when you were first, in the early 70s, when the Moog was first catching on, that you think sound almost embarrassingly dated today?
The first use of the Moog synthesizer on the West Coast sounds embarrassingly dated. It's a record called Zodiac Cosmic Sound.
How can that not sound dated?
Well, what happened is this was in 1967, and we were wondering whether we could stay in business because we weren't making any money and nobody understood our products. We were invited to exhibit our new synthesizers out at the Audio Engineering Society in the West Coast. So at that exhibit, we were then invited to bring this one instrument that nobody had ever seen out there to a recording session of Zodiac Cosmic Sounds. and the synthesizer was used to make some distinctly novel electronic effects, one of which begins the album. But what the album is, it starts off with very conventional sounding Hollywood movie music. Bum ba ba bum ba 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 ba. And then with a low organ tone, the narrator comes on. He had a voice as deep as crude oil, and he said, 9 times the color red explodes like heated blood. The battle's on. Then ba 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 ba. Like that. The producers at the time were very impressed with themselves about how in this was and how hip and how many they were going to sell. Now when you play it, people just break out laughing.
So is the bum ba bums that you were doing on the synthesizer?
No, they were done more or less conventionally.
Where did the synthesizer come in?
Just drop in sounds. Let's see if I can set one up. The Mini Moog is really not big enough to do all the sounds that we did, but for instance, start with one sound. We had another sound. Okay, that's about a whole tone apart. I'll add a third sound. Okay. Now, that's the general sort of sound that they liked. And then we just glide up a little bit here. That sort of sound.
Robert Moog speaking with Terry Gross in 2000. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2000 interview with Robert Moog, inventor of the Moog synthesizer and a pioneer in the field of electronic music. His legacy is being celebrated today and tomorrow at the Moog Fest in Asheville, North Carolina.
What are the early records, the first records that you think really helped the Moog synthesizer catch on?
The biggie was Switched on Bach.
Mm-hmm.
In light of that, everything else pales. Switched on Bach came out at the end of 1968. I can remember playing a cut from it at an Audio Engineering Society convention in New York City, about a month in advance of its release. And I can remember all those cynical, experienced recording engineers listening to this and being so overjoyed that a piece of work so innovative and of such high quality was being done that they gave Carlos a standing ovation.
Did you like Switched on Bach?
Oh, yes. Yes, in fact, I visited Carlos several times while Carlos and his associates were working on the piece, and I was just bowled over every time I came. Something new was there to be heard.
Well, why don't we hear some music from Switched on Bach? And it was Walter Carlos back
yes.
then, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is Walter Carlos at the Moog synthesizer. That's Walter Carlos playing Switched on Bach, the record that helped really establish commercially the Moog synthesizer. My guest is Robert Moog, the creator of the Moog synthesizer and the related synthesizers that he's since created. He's a pioneer of electronic instruments. When you created the first Moog synthesizer, was it out of an interest in electronics or music or both?
I had been building electronic musical instruments since I was a kid. It was always a hobby of mine, and I always approached it as an electronics person, somebody who liked to work with a soldering iron and a pair of pliers, who also had some musical training. By the time I got to building synthesizers, I had for perhaps 20 years experience building electronic musical instruments.
Well, I know you built theremins, and we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. What else did you build?
Back in the 40s and early 50s, building simple electronic projects was a popular hobby for many people. Back then, you could buy a few parts and with tubes and build something on your kitchen table, and it would actually work. So there were magazines describing all sorts of hobby projects, and I can remember building one-note organs, two-note organs, radios, phonograph, amplifiers, and that was my life. That's what I did back then. Other kids went out and beat each other up or played baseball, and I built electronics.
I think your father was an amateur radio operator?
Yes, he was. He was a professional engineer. He worked for Consolidated Edison in New York City.
That's the electric company.
Yes, it is. He worked for them all his life, and he was also an amateur radio operator.
So this was ham radio?
Yes.
So did you think your father's ham radio stuff had an impact on you?
Why, sure. He was the one who taught me how to do electronics. He taught me how to use a soldering iron. My father had a very complete hobby basement with machine tools and all sorts of electronic stuff. I used to love to go down and just be with him and work with him.
It was a real guy thing for you?
I think so, yeah. It was a dad and son thing.
Did mom ever go down to the basement?
No. No. Mom had the rest of the house.
Now, before you started inventing your own instruments, you built theremins. So let's start with what a theremin is. You've brought one with you. I imagine this is one that you've built.
Yes, it is. Well, it's one that my company built.
Right. That's good enough.
Close enough.
Give us a taste of the basic sound of the theremin. Our listeners will recognize it from lots of science fiction movies.
Okay, let me describe what I'm doing. I'm not touching the instrument when I'm playing it now. I'm moving my hands around it to control the volume and the pitch of the sound. So I'll just make a very quick sound, and then maybe later I can actually try and play a melody. So when you wave your hands around a theremin, that's the sort of sound you get. It's not particularly musical, but it certainly sounds different from a piano or even a synthesizer. A theremin is an electronic musical instrument with two metal antennas. One is a vertical rod on the right-hand side of the instrument. The closer you get your right hand to that rod, the higher the pitch goes. So if you imagine a violin string in the air between your shoulder and the pitch antenna, and by moving my hand along that string, you can imagine the sort of gestures I make.
But it's an imaginary string.
It's an imaginary string. I'm not touching anything when I play. On the left hand of the instrument, there is a loop, a metal loop, which controls the volume. The closer I get my hand to that loop, the softer the sound gets. So my gestures consist of moving my right hand back and forth from my right shoulder to the pitch antenna to make the notes, and moving my left hand up and down as if I'm conducting an imaginary orchestra out there to control the volume and articulate the sound.
Would you play us a science fiction effect on the theremin? You could even play something from one of the movies that the theremin, one of the movies, scores that the theremin was used in.
A science fiction effect. I'll try.
And do you get that little vibrato by wiggling your hand back and forth?
Yes. I move my right hand from my wrist rapidly back and forth, just as a violinist does.
Would you like to leave us with some music on the Moog synthesizer?
Let's see. Thank you. Well, that's some music. I don't know how much, but it's some.
Robert Moog, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry. I'm glad to have the opportunity.
Robert Moog, speaking with Terry Gross in 2000. He died 5 years later. Today and tomorrow, a music festival called Moogfest in Asheville, North Carolina, celebrates the spirit and legacy of Robert Moog. I'm David Biancooley, and this is Fresh Air.